Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Dwayne.
Hello, I'm Dwayne. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to welcome all the newcomers. And if this is your first time here, you know, hopefully there's a solution. I'm going to give you my experience, strength, and hope. a little bit nervous, but, you know, you're all friends, so, you know, I know you won't beat me up too bad. And they're all naked. Oh my God. Well, some of them. Anyways, yeah, won't get that out of my mind. My drinking career started at a very young age. I was 12 years old, and me and my friends thought, you know, it would be nice to steal some booze from our parents' liquor cabinet. And I was having a birthday party, so, you know, it was a good occasion to celebrate and try liquor, you know. Seeing that other people drinking at parties and stuff like that, it just sounded like a really good thing. So we got mason jars and we got vodka, whiskey, wine, whatever we could get. Just take a little bit of each and we'll put it all together in a mason jar and we'll have a real party. Well, you know, so that's the way my drinking career started, you know, with hard liquor mixed up and just, you know, balls to the walls on that. Thank you. So we did. We proceeded to drink it, you know, at the birthday party, after the cake and the festivities and stuff. And we got lit. It tasted nasty, nasty. But it gave me that burning sensation, and it just that tingly all through my body and my friends, and we were all getting rowdy and stuff. And then, I don't know, you know, we went on our bikes and we started kicking over trash cans, and we started, you know, just started running hell through the neighborhood, you know. And at some point, and this has happened, I mean, I guess I just started it off with, you know, some point we all got naked, you know, streaking and just, you know, and that pretty much will sum up my drinking career till from 12 to 43. At some point, I was going to get naked, you know, God forbid, but I did. You know, that was like one of those things that just would happen, you know, all through my drinking, you know, sometimes very embarrassing and waking up in places and yeah. So like I said, I started drinking at 12 years old and wasn't drinking every day, wasn't drinking every weekend, but the drinking obsession started. I liked it, you know, and I wanted more when I could get it. And so junior high came, and, you know, there's girls and parties, you know, that you go to a little bit in junior high. And so I would drink then. I worked at a grocery store, which, you know, I could get booze at 12 years old. You know, I had a job. And I thought that gave me entitlement, you know. I was working, I'm entitled to drink, you know. My poor mother, you know, being divorced and working two jobs, you know, really couldn't keep a rein on us kids, three boys that were wild as hell. And she did her best, you know. She had to work two jobs to support us, you know, to put a roof over our head, and three boys eat a lot of food, you know. So I'm not blaming her because, you know, there was discipline, a lot of it, and there was rules. I just never followed them. You know, I was defiant, you know, and I thought, you know, since I had a job, I could do whatever I wanted, you know, including drinking, including coming home at 2 a.m. After being on a date, you know, in seventh grade, you know, not asking, you know, permission or anything like that, coming home drunk. And of course I got disciplined, I got whooped, you know, and it ain't the whoopings you get today, you know, they were real whoopings, and I deserved it, but it didn't stop me, you know, nothing would stop me, you know, from drinking or the consequences. So we go into high school. It just starts getting more and more progressive. I think what kept me in high school was sports. You know, I was very good at football, and it kept me in school because I sure in the hell didn't want to be at school. I'd rather be working, making money, or drinking and partying and chasing women. But in order to play football, you had to go to school and stuff, and I went as least as possible, you know. And the coaches made us sign a contract, you know, we weren't supposed to drink and do anything, but we all did, you know. On weekends, we'd go out and tear up the town and get drunk, get in fights, you know, do something. And then the coaches would be at some of the weddings sometimes that we'd be at, and they would, back then they turned a blind eye, you know, they would turn their heads and like they didn't see what was going on, and we were all lit to the gills, and it wasn't just me, it was, you know, all my friends too. And drinking and driving was, you know, the pastime to do in high school. You know, we'd go over to Tulare and cruise Tulare and be drinking and you know, checking out the Tulare girls, you know, because we were from Visalia. We wanted something different. And then they were over here cruising in Visalia looking at the Visalia girls. And that was just the way it went. And then we'd have those kegger parties. And everything was, you know, it was fun. You know, it was fun for a while. Then college came, you know. I barely get through high school by the skin of my teeth. I mean, I graduated, but in sports, I was a pretty good athlete, and I would have had, if I would have just got good grades and went to school, scholarships, you know, to play football to other colleges and stuff. But because of my grades were so lousy, that they couldn't offer me any scholarships. So at the end of my high school, I had gotten a cheerleader pregnant, and you know, everything was just, my drinking was starting to catch up to me with my ways that I was living my lifestyle. And so my senior year, my gift was having a boy, you know, before I graduated. No, just after I graduated. But, and that was back then, that was a big old scandal, you know. So we had a shotgun wedding, you know, because I didn't want to get married, but her parents, I just turned 18, she was 17, they were going to get me for statutory rape. And I was like, whoa, what the hell? You know, I didn't rape nobody, you know. And she goes, well, she's a minor. You turned 18. You know, if you don't marry her, you're going to prison or you're going to jail or something. And, you know, you're telling a kid that, and that's never been in jail, you know. It's pretty scary, but the defiant was, you know, F you. You know, I'm not going to do what you tell me to do and stuff. And so we almost had a fist fight right there in his living room. But her mother calmed him down, calmed me down, and I ended up getting married. But I was still drinking, and I was making poor choices. One of them was I got really drunk and started dating again. You know, being married, you know, because I'm going to be defiant. They made me get married, but, you know, I don't have to act married. And so I didn't, you know. I dated her friends. I dated whoever just to throw it in her parents' face, you know, which, you know, hindsight was like, that's an amends I have to make. And, you know, pretty. I did some pretty bad and ugly things, and thinking that I was justified, that I was right. You know, one other one. I went to prom being married, and not with my wife. You know, and I thought that was fine, and I was lit to the gills. And if you Visalia, you know, puts all the high schools together, and you have one prom, and so. They announced your names, and when they announced my name, the whole place just went silent, you know, because this is a small town, or was a small town, and word gets around pretty quick. And I don't know what the hell the girl was thinking that went with me, you know. She had to be nuts, too. And she's a really nice gal. She's a friend of mine. But, I mean, those type of things are the norm that I would do when I was drinking. So we have the child, and her parents stepped back. We got it annulled. They ended up with custody, and thank God for that, you know. Thank God that I wasn't in charge of this precious person's life, you know, because I couldn't take care of my own, you know. Even at that age, I just couldn't see it. I thought I had it all together, and my decisions were good, and I was just defiant, and I was stubborn, prideful, and hurt a lot of people. You know, I really hurt a lot of people in my disease, and it progressively got worse very quick. Well, I went to college. You know, I didn't take the SATs or anything like that. I played the all-star football game. They came down on the field, and they said, hey, do you want to play football at COS? I said, hey, I didn't take no test. I'm not enrolled. They said, don't worry. Show up Monday. You're on the team. So I did, and I did very well on the field. I didn't go to class. I just drank and played football. And so I got, after the first year, I did very well, and then I got kicked out, you know, on academic probation, but I just couldn't pull it together to make it to that class, or any classes. You know, all I had to do was show up, and I couldn't even do that most of the times, you know, because of my drinking or my other activities, you know, it was too much for me to go to class. So, one of the coaches that I respected very much got me a job at UPS. You know, I had an opportunity, and I made it work for 8 years. You know, I kind of pulled it together. I started loading trucks, and for 4 years, and I worked at a liquor store. You know, every job that I worked at, I stole from. You know, I was a hard worker that had entitlement issues. I thought, well, shoot, they owe me more, so I'll just take it. You know, I'll take what I think is fair. You know, pay me whatever you want to pay me, but I'm going to take what I'm worth. You know. So that's the way. I was a horrible employee. So that job, I loaded trucks for 4 years. I worked at a liquor store too. And after 4 years, and I went driving. I went to a UPS driver. I did that for another 4 years. And after the first month or two, you know, of training and learning the routes and learning, you know, it's a hard job. It's a physical job and it's a mental job. But I didn't want to stop the partying, you know. I didn't want to stop the drinking. And UPS, they drank. You know, a lot of guys drank hard. And we're in the union, and you, at that time, they couldn't really test you and stuff. The union protected you in a lot of ways. And after I started learning the routes and stuff, I was drinking at bars 7 days a week. So I would come to work literally under the influence. I was drunk. I was legally drunk. I mean, every day that I drove that truck. One day I was so hungover, and I had to drive the route in Tulare. And I would just get on the freeway and then I'd gun it, you know, just, you know, try to get my, you know, the cobwebs out of my head, you know, get ready for another hard day. And I was just, you know, not paying attention to anything. And I had this police officer with his lights just behind me, and I don't even see him, you know, because I'm just, you know, focused on getting to work hungover, feeling like shit. And then I hear, "Hey, UPS driver, do you ever look in your rearview mirror?" And I'm like, "Oh, scared the shit out of me." And I'm like, "Whoa!" And I knew I was lit, you know. And he didn't pull me over, you know. I never got pulled over in the truck, because if I would have, I would have got a DUI, you know, easily. Now that I know the way I drank, you know, and I drank hard liquor and I drank till 2, 3, 4 in the morning, and then, you know, be at work at 8, you know, it doesn't work out of your system that quick. So, you know, I was putting people in danger, you know. My employer, I was cheating, you know, not giving it my all. You know, I was giving what I could, but you know what? I was putting the company in danger. I was putting other people in danger. And, you know, it was a great job. They paid well, had benefits, and I ended up messing that up because of drinking. And then I was asked to resign. Basically, I was fired, but they gave me, you know, just resign. And then, you know, and I had stole from them, you know. And they found out about some things, but they just let it go. You know, you're done, you're gone, and they didn't want any more problems with me as long as I quit. And, you know, I'd pull it together for a little while and get another good job. Well, they started getting harder to get, you know, because my disease was progressing. And so they were getting harder to get. And then I lost my license. I ended up with 8 DUIs and 7 driving on a suspended license. So I wasn't getting no driving jobs in the future, to say the least. So that career option was closed. And, you know, my alcoholic thinking is that, you know, I'm not going to go to these DUI schools, this and that, and try to get my license back and pay this fine and all that. I'm just going to wait till it falls off the record, you know. Well, they don't fall off. They don't come off. You got to do the DUI classes, and and your fines just keep on accumulating interest and stuff, and I wasn't ready, you know. I wasn't ready to quit drinking. So I just kicked it up a notch, you know. I found other alternatives to make my drinking go longer, and I just drank more. I just drank more. I, you know, every time I would get a job, I just couldn't hold it for more than a year. You know, that was about the max. They would love me at first, you know. They would give me every opportunity in the world to straighten out, and I wouldn't, and then they would end up firing me. So that went on from 12 to I was 43 years old, you know, before, I mean, I was beat up. The last job I had was in construction, because that's the only place that would hire an alcoholic drunk, and you were able to drink, you know, on the job somewhat. So I was working for the Don Lawrence Company for 5 years, and this was a job that you were basically allowed to drink on the job. You know, they turned a blind eye to it. And damned, you know, and I did well there for a while. And about my fifth year, my alcohol got so severe. I mean, I was drinking morning, noon, and night, and trying to keep everything together, and being so sick and so hungover and so miserable, you know, wanting to quit, you know, having an opportunity once again to do something good in my life and stuff, and feeling that misery, that desperation, that wanting to quit but can't, having to get up and have it at night, in the morning, you know. I just lowered my bar of standards, you know, on what I did. You know, I thought I'd never drink at work. Well, I drank at work, and I stole, and I lied, and I did every despicable thing that you could think of to get booze or whatever, and do it on the job, you know. So the job where you were allowed to drink somewhat, I got fired for drinking, you know. And there comes a point in a person's life where they're like, you know, I've told enough lies, you know. I was done lying. So when my boss came up to me and he asked me, you know, because he was told, well, Dwayne's drinking pretty heavy on the job, you know. I think you need to talk to him and stuff. And he came up to me, and all I had to do was say no. Nope, not me. Wasn't drinking. But I was done with the lies, you know. And I said, yeah, I was drinking. And he goes, okay, you're fired, you're terminated, in a very kind way and stuff. And I said, okay, you know, I was just done. I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I know I'd been crying out in a way to God, cussing God or praying to God or asking God or, you know, but there was a desire that was deep enough to quit. I just didn't know how. So once I got to that desperation where truly in my heart that I wanted to quit, I just didn't know how. And I knew I was going to die, you know, somehow, some way, that alcohol was going to kill me. And it was killing me slowly, but, you know, it was still killing me. And I was so miserable and disgusted with myself, you know. I mean, I really couldn't look in a mirror. I didn't want to look at, you know, the piece of shit that I had become, you know. And especially when you have talents and a lot of opportunities in your life, and you just screw them up, you know. And then those opportunities get less and less, or they stop altogether. And then you're looking back 15, 20 years, and you're going, what the hell happened? What the hell happened to me? You know, this ain't what I this ain't what I had planned out for my life. I don't want to be a fucking alcoholic. I don't want to be a drunk. I don't want to be a liar. I don't want to be a cheat. I don't want to be a thief. You know, why am I? You know, why am I doing all these disgusting things and hurting friends, family, and everybody that comes in contact with me? Why? Well, drinking was one of the things that made me do things that, you know, I would normally not do. So with that sincere cry for help, God started putting the wheels in motion. I didn't have to do shit. One, he got me fired. You know, so you don't need a job. You're a lousy employee. You're a thief. You know what? You don't need a job. You need to follow me, listen to me, and, you know, start healing. You know, so I was still living on the subdivision where I was working, and I'm paranoid now. I don't have a job. You know, I'm going to be homeless. He's going to kick me out, you know, off. You know, I'm just freaking out now that, and, man, I'm like, I don't want to live out on the streets. I don't, you know, I don't know what to do. So a friend of mine comes and he says, hey, I went through Pine and it kept me sober for 7 years, you know. And he said it was the best 7 years of his life. But he was drinking. And I'm like, he goes, Dwayne, you know what? At least you'll have a roof over your head for 60 days and you'll have food. And then you can go from there. But at least you won't be on the street, you won't be homeless, so give it a try. So we went over there and he knew the person that was running it at the time, and the beds were full and I had to get on a waiting list. And in the meantime, I was doing an outpatient program, waiting for a phone call. And there wasn't cell phones back then, so I had to give my dad's number for a contact number. And long story short was I wasn't available when they called, and I didn't get the bed. So, but you know, it was there. You know, I started learning about the recovery places, and the thing was being willing to go into a recovery home, which before I wasn't willing to go anywhere. I wanted, you know, you help me, but I'm going to tell you the way you're going to help me. You know, I'm that type of attitude. So, my plan, I got more drunk. And I started making a list of people I worked for and stuff, started getting numbers, and I was drunker than shit and making phone calls asking for work and this and that. And I think I called maybe 50 people, maybe 100, I don't know. And out of those 50 or 100 people I called, I only got one phone call back. And it was a person I worked for when I was about 16, and unbeknownst to me, that he had done the AA program, he had ran some recovery homes, and did all this, and then he had moved out of state to Oregon, and he just moved back into California, maybe a year or so before I called him. Grassel knows him because that's where I heard of Grass's name and how crazy Grassel was and stuff. His name was Don Brooks. He's not with us anymore. He got his black chip, and but he mentored me, you know, and he was the only one that called me back. And so he goes, well, I don't have any work for you, but you know, how about if I pick you up and we talk and stuff and maybe we can work something out. He knew there was something wrong, some desperation and stuff, and he just wanted to check it out before he went any further. So we get together. He's telling me that, you know, hey, I've changed. I'm not the same person that you knew way back then, because he used to be a little wild and crazy too, you know, back in the day. And he said, you know, I'm a Christian now. I go to church and stuff, and I don't, you know, drink or do any of that and stuff. And he goes, asked me, you know, what I did, and I told him, and he was flipping houses at the time, so, and that was right up my alley, you know, fixing up houses. And so, you know, I had run out of money, run out of booze, run, you know, so I was kind of getting a little unfoggy, you know, and he goes, well, let's try out working at this, you know, see how it works. And so he'd pick me up every day. We'd go to work and you know, and he started taking me to church. And that was working really good, you know, working great. You know, I loved it. I loved going to church. I loved everything. And unbeknownst to me, he was working the 12-step program on me without me knowing it, you know. But after the first job, we finished, and I got a pocket full of cash and time on my hands. So I wasn't done yet. I went on a little bender for a couple months, you know. I was missing in action and stuff. I had to go get beat up a little bit more and stuff, and then come crawling with my tail between my legs, you know, for one more time. And I think I was during the summer in Visalia, and I was just tore up. I mean, it was like 100-some degrees. I was on a bicycle. I was drinking hard liquor, and I'd been up for a few days, and I wrecked on my bicycle and fractured 3 ribs and punctured a lung. And I ended up in the hospital for a week, you know? And that was the very last day that I drank, you know. And I don't know if you've ever broken ribs or something, but they take a hell of a long time to heal. And it was the punctured lung that really messed me up. And so I was in the hospital for a week. And, you know, I needed that time, you know. I don't know if I would have went through the DTs or whatever that a lot of people have went through. They had me medicated, so I think they kind of brought me down, or they knew that, you know, hey, this guy's pretty messed up. So they kept me very comfortable, you know, and fed me and kind of brought me back to a little bit of health. And so my friend Don Brooks comes in the hospital. I don't know where he hears that I ended up in the hospital. But he comes and sees me, and he says, are you done now? You know, are you willing to go to or do anything, you know, to go to a recovery place? And I'm yeah, yes, I will. He goes, okay, I'll take care of it. You just got to promise me that you can stay sober for a couple days, you know, till I get you a bed or get you set up to go there. And at that time, I was willing. I could handle not drinking for a couple days, you know, because God lifted the obsession to drink, you know, some because of my sincere appeal to him to get help. And so Don did what he said he was going to do. He got me a bed at this, it's a Christian recovery. It's called U-Turn for Christ. It's in Paris, California. It's hot as hell. And I went there in July. I mean, it gets up to 120 degrees. And it's a working ministry. Oh, I'm running out of time. It's a working ministry, and that's where I started my sobriety. It was hell. You know, for the first month it was hell. You know, I got real sick. I didn't think I was going to make it. I was hallucinating. I wasn't getting any sleep. I was coughing. I went to the emergency room twice. And I was working in the kitchen. Everybody's blaming me for stuff, you know, getting them sick and stuff. And it's just, it was 80 men in a bunkhouse, you know, in bunk beds. And it was nasty. You know, it had hot showers. We washed our clothes on a rock. You know, literally, with lye soap. Johnny Bonds can contest to that because he went to the same one I did. It's kept his butt sober for 13 years. So, I mean, it works if you want it. You know, it's real inexpensive. They feed you moldy food or whatever food that they have available that's given to them. And you survive. And you work your butt off. And for 60 days, that's what I did. And I graduated that program. I came back to church, you know. Everything was going good. I was working and stuff, but there was some part of me that was irritable, discontent, and crazy, you know. And that's what, with AA, you know, I've learned in the big book and stuff, there's a solution to everything. You know, if you work it, you know. Of course, when I got into AA, about the same time Bill did, Hatzman, and I've seen him, you know, throughout the years and stuff, and he did the program right. He got into service, got into the whole triangle thing, but I didn't. And so my disease was progressively getting worse, you know. Not drinking, but my mind was getting sicker. And you can see Bill was flourishing and stuff. I went without doing the steps and just going to meetings for 7.5 years. I don't suggest that for anybody because I went effing crazy, mentally freaking crazy. I was a nut. And my mind finally, at the 7.5 years, it wouldn't shut off. You know, suicide. I didn't want to drink anymore. The obsession of drink was gone. But the obsession to live was also not there. I wanted to drive into a tree. I wanted to kill myself. I wanted to end, shut off the mind. You know. So I gave this program a try. I did it. I got a sponsor. I got into it, and this time full board, and gave it my all. And my all was just one day at a time, hanging onto my ass and barely making it. For a year and a half, this went on. I mean, nonstop. I mean, my mind felt like it was just buzzing, like electricity was going through it 24/7. That's how bad it got to. I like to call my little angel Freeman, you know, help me out. Larry, Bill, you know, there's so many of you in this room that has helped me along my journey. You know, if I don't get you all, you know, I apologize, but, you know, somewhere along the road, you know, we help each other. You know, that's how this program works. But, you know, all I wanted was take, take, take. And until I started giving back, until I started working with the newcomer, until I started doing the triangle and getting up here and talking, which I thought, you know, God, I'm not going to be able to talk for 45 minutes, and I'm already there, you know, and stuff. And it just seems like I got so much more to say. But the only thing I really, really, this is a miracle. You are all miracles. You know, I'm a effing miracle, you know, be standing up here today doing what, because I'm not the same person. I'm not that liar. I'm not that cheat. I'm a different person. I'm a newborn person. That other person's dead, you know. I've got a nephew, Cody, in here. That's a miracle, you know. And I'm very proud of him. You know, he's a miracle. And keeping these doors open and doing the things that Bill has asked me to do before and stuff works. It works if you work it, you know? And I was stubborn. And it almost killed me because of my pride and my stubbornness and not doing the things that are suggested. And it's harder. You know, you want an easier, softer way? Do the work. That's the easier, softer way. I was always trying to manipulate something. You know, I'm going to do this. You know, I'm going to take... And there is no shortcuts. The shortcut is to get in and get the work done. Work hard at it, you know? And it was almost too late. I almost let it go too long, you know? And I suffered and I paid the price. But there was so many people that were willing to help me in these rooms, you know? And God just puts them, you know. It seems like every time I needed, you know, some extra care or whatever, there was the person just there, you know. He would say, hey, I was thinking about you and I just thought I'd call you, you know, and I'd be having a meltdown or something, you know. And that's God working in my life when I started working this program. And today I don't have that... I don't have that irritable discontent feeling. I got that spiritual awakening, you know. It wasn't a bolt of lightning that came down and stuff. It's the peace of mind now. It's my mind being able to shut off. That's my spiritual awakening. Seeing you newcomers, lights go on in your eyes. That's my spiritual awakening, you know. Seeing someone make it, you know. And that's the joy that this program gives us, you know. You're all miracles, you know, and you know there's a future. There's a bright future, but you're going to have to work at it. You're going to have to do the suggestions and do the work, you know. Half measures avail us nothing, and that's true because I half-assed it, and I got more than I really deserved, you know. God was gracious, but even God says, okay, you need to do it, or I'm going to make it so miserable for you that, you know, you come to this fork in the road. And I just want to thank you all for tonight. I know I went a little bit over and stuff, and I still have a whole lot to say if you want to speak to me after the meeting and stuff. And yeah. My wife's cracking jokes over there. Yeah, I even got married, you know, in this program. You know, I kind of conned her and, you know, did a little bit of crazy math, you know, because we got married suddenly and she's not pregnant, you know. Wasn't because of that. But anyways, I love being married, you know. I love having a relationship. And if it wasn't for this program, I wouldn't be able to do it. I wouldn't be able to run my own business. There's so many things that I would have bailed, you know, when the times got harder, wouldn't drink. But I don't do that no more. You know, I stick it out. And like tonight, I showed up, I suited up, showed up, and, you know, I just want to thank you all because you're the ones that keep me sober. So with that, I'm Dwayne Alcoholics.